Welcome, Truth Seekers, to The Deep Dive. This is your Truth Seeker Weekly Briefing Alternative News for the week of September 12th. On behalf of the Great Awakening Report, the platform dedicated to uncovering hidden truths and understanding these profound global shifts, we're really thrilled to bring you this audio recap. It covers the most critical alternative news and events. Our mission today, well, it's to cut through the noise, unpack the stories the mainstream might just gloss over, and pull out those crucial nuggets of knowledge. We want to help you connect the dots. As our briefing puts it, and this is powerful, the warning signs are no longer subtle assassinations, unrest, and censorship. Show us the system is failing. Now is the time to see clearly and act decisively.
That's quite a statement. It's a real call to awareness, isn't it? And what we aim to do today is help you look beyond just the immediate headlines. We'll explore how these, well, often overlooked stories and these deeper signals are actually revealing a much broader pattern. They're pushing us all, really, to understand the underlying shifts happening worldwide. It's about recognizing those deeper currents, the ones driving what many call the Great Awakening. You know, that collective shift in consciousness where people are increasingly seeking truth and clarity.
Exactly. All right, let's jump right in. Let's unpack our first big theme, this evolving picture of global alliances. Who's really calling the shots here? Our sources are highlighting a narrative around what's been called an autocratic alliance. We're talking Russia, China, North Korea, supposedly, with India kind of cautiously on the periphery. On the surface, yeah, we've seen the big military parades, the joint statements. It looks like a powerful consolidation, right? Like a unified bloc forming.
Right. That's the surface story, the popular interpretation you see everywhere. But digging into the briefing, you get a much more nuanced picture. The report suggests that beneath all the optics, this alliance actually lacks substance.
Lacks substance? How so?
Well, you don't see binding treaties, the economic pledges, often quite vague, and crucially, their national interests often clash. Think about it. Russia wants sanctions relief, mostly. China's aiming for trade dominance. North Korea, they're looking for legitimacy on the world stage. And India, like you said, is very deliberately hedging its bets.
Okay, so they're not really a unified team with a single playbook.
Not in the traditional sense, no. But here's the profound insight from the briefing. Even symbolic unity matters. Just the perception that they're cohesive can significantly shift global strategy. It creates pressure. It can force the U.S. and its allies, for instance, to spread their resources thinner. It really shows how, in geopolitics, perception can be just as destabilizing as, you know, actual policy changes. For us, the takeaway is that humanity seems to be increasingly seeing through this illusion of rigid sides. People are starting to question the real forces, the real motivations behind these global conflicts.
That's a crucial distinction, perception versus reality. And it's not just the major powers making moves, is it?
Yeah.
The briefing also highlights something fascinating with smaller nations asserting their power, like a Pacific Islands Forum.
Right.
The immediate news focused on the forum itself, held in the Solomon Islands, tackling huge issues, rising seas, climate migration, economic resilience, existential stuff. But the key detail, the really telling part, was the conscious exclusion of external powers. Mm. We're talking the U.S., China, Taiwan, kept out of some of their most critical conversations.
Mm-hmm.
It really suggests these island nations are trying to strengthen their own cooperation, make decisions about their own resources, ports, fisheries, without being, well, pawns in some superpower game.
Exactly. And this development, it raises a vital question for anyone watching global power dynamics. What does this mean for the traditional structures, the old ways of influence? The underlying message is pretty clear. This is sovereignty in action. Small states reclaiming their voice in a system that's long been dominated by empires.
Sovereignty in action, I like that.
Yeah, and their actions are actually foreshadowing, the briefing suggests, new models of governance rooted in unity, not dependency. It even describes these Pacific Islands as prophetic symbols. Frontline communities teaching the world powerful lessons about balance, resilience, self-determination.
Wow, prophetic symbols.
It connects on a broader human level to this renewed focus on collective stewardship, you know, a more respectful relationship with the earth, and the understanding that real survival, real thriving requires independence and unity. It's not just about politics or tech fixes. It's a powerful lesson, especially coming from communities directly facing the impacts of these global shifts.
Absolutely. A real testament to self-determination
right
there. Okay, let's pivot now. Something incredibly timely. Generative AI. Our briefing treats it not just as some tech trend, but as strategic infrastructure, like on par with nuclear power or oil. That's how significant it's seen. And the current situation, well, you've got the U.S. restricting AI ship exports to China,
Europe's drafting these AI sovereignty frameworks. Smaller states are desperately scrambling just for access to training data, compute power. We even saw Nepal ban major platforms, WhatsApp, Facebook, Instagram, citing national security. It's a truly global scramble for control.
It is. And what's really striking here is how this AI arms race exposes the fragility of digital dependency. It's stark. Nations that lack the capacity to develop their own AI, they risk being, quote, digitally colonized.
Digitally colonized.
Yeah, having their digital future basically shaped and controlled by external powers. And for individuals, this really sharpens our awareness, doesn't it? Whoever controls the information systems increasingly controls the narrative itself, the ideas shaping our collective consciousness. It calls for each of us, really, to reclaim our inner sovereignty, learning critical discernment, looking beyond the algorithmic narratives that are, let's face it, often designed to influence us.
Right.
It's about recognizing that this digital space is no longer neutral. We need to understand how these platforms shape our collective thinking.
That's a pretty stark warning about digital colonization. But isn't there also an argument maybe that global AI development, even with risks, could lead to shared advancements, things that benefit everyone, smaller nations included, if it's managed ethically?
That's a completely valid point to raise. The potential for positive innovation is immense, absolutely. However, the briefing's focus here is more on the current reality of the situation. And right now, control, rather than equitable access, seems to be the dominant driver.
Okay.
The intent behind how these systems are developed and deployed is just crucial. And the concern highlighted is how this concentration of power leaves so many vulnerable, which actually leads us perfectly into the next layer of this digital disruption. Hacktivism.
Yes, right. Moving from digital control to digital disruption.
Mm-hmm.
The briefing details this evolving threat, and the immediate headlines show hacktivist collectives have moved beyond just, you know, symbolic website defacements. They're actually attacking operational infrastructure now, municipal water treatment plants, power grids, even hospital IP systems. What's really unsettling is how muddy the attribution often is. Who's doing it? Independent activists, criminal gangs, or could it be covert state-sponsored false flags? Governments seem to be struggling even to classify these events. Is it crime, terrorism, outright cyber warfare? The lines are blurred.
They really are.
Right.
And it forces us to consider a fundamental question. What happens when our most basic necessities become targets? The deeper signal here is that the blurring of lines destabilizes old categories of security, things we took for granted, what was once considered safe. Just turning on the lights, getting clean water is being revealed as incredibly fragile, susceptible to disruption.
Yeah, it's unnerving.
And for our collective awareness, this shatters illusions of permanence. It really calls for localized resilience. It underscores the importance of things like off-grid energy, water independence, community preparedness, not just as practical steps, but as sort of components of a holistic self-reliance. It's about individuals and communities taking back some control over the essentials.
Absolutely. That shift from relying on huge centralized systems towards building local resilience, it feels more and more apparent.
Okay.
So from digital security, let's look at financial stability. Because our deep dive shows the very nature of money itself seems to be shifting. The source points directly to financial and payment system fragmentation. On the surface, we see nations actively hedging against reliance on those traditional Western financial channels, right? China's CIPS system is gaining traction. BRICS nations are talking about local currency settlements. And dozens, literally dozens of central banks are piloting digital currencies, CBDCs designed to bypass the SWIFT system. It honestly feels like we're watching parallel financial universes emerge.
It really does. And a key takeaway here, according to the briefing, is that money itself is being unmasked as a tool of control. That long-held illusion, the idea of one single dominant global financial system, it's clearly cracking.
Unmasked as a tool of control.
Yeah. And as nations actively create these alternatives, ordinary people are starting to ask really fundamental questions. Questions like, what is currency, really? Who actually decides its value? And why should money automatically mean debt and scarcity? These profound questions, as the briefing explains, are awakening pathways toward conscious economics. Things like barter, local trade, even abundance mindsets. It's signaling a deep collective reevaluation of our whole financial reality and maybe our values too.
Those are powerful questions. They definitely resonate with a lot of people right now. So how can communities best navigate this fragmentation of the global financial system?
Well, it really pushes us to reconsider our relationship with value in exchange itself. The briefing suggests that by questioning these fundamental assumptions about money, people can start exploring alternatives. Things like local trade networks, maybe skills-based bartering systems, community currencies. It's about understanding that wealth isn't solely defined by some centralized system. It can be built through decentralized, resilient local economies, economies that foster genuine abundance and self-sufficiency. It's a pretty significant shift in perspective.
That makes a lot of sense, especially when you connect it to another key area of fragility, global supply chains. I mean, ever since COVID-19, then trade wars, the Ukraine conflict, corporations have been racing to diversify, right? This China plus one strategy, moving production to places like India, Vietnam, Mexico, seems logical, trying to reduce that dependency. Yeah. But how effective has it actually been?
Well, what's still very evident, looking closely, is that despite all these efforts, a deep reliance on Chinese upstream suppliers remains really entrenched for many key industries.
Oh, okay. So the core dependency might still be there.
In many cases, yes. So shocks, whether they're natural disasters or geopolitical flare-ups, they still ripple unpredictably across these long global supply chains. The crucial underlying message here is that globalization's fragility is laid bare. It's out in the open now. Humanity is kind of waking up to the inherent danger of these long, brittle chains controlled by distant powers. And this insight, it's catalyzing a return to localism. You see communities rediscovering the wisdom of local production, shorter supply lines, prioritizing resilience over just sheer convenience. The lesson here, the briefing suggests, is that moving towards decentralization actually mirrors a kind of principle of distributed power, which ultimately creates a more stable, more responsive system for everyone.
Okay, so connecting this back to our everyday lives, what are some practical ways you see this push towards localism actually manifesting? For someone listening, what could that look like?
Yeah, good question. It's about consciously making choices, right? Supporting local businesses whenever you can, exploring local food networks, farmers markets, CSAs, maybe even engaging in community-level production or skill-sharing initiatives. The core idea is to reduce that dependence on distant, vulnerable supply lines and instead build robust, more self-sufficient local ecosystems. This doesn't mean totally isolating ourselves, of course, but creating a more balanced web, a web of local and global connections that really prioritizes resilience.
Powerful insights for individual action there. Okay, finally, let's look at these growing domestic pressures, the social shifts happening around the world. Our briefing highlights emergent domestic pressures in smaller and middle powers, and also civil liberties under siege. These seem linked. On the surface, we're seeing Gen Z-led protests rising up across Africa, South America, parts of Asia, protests against corruption, economic stagnation, environmental collapse, often digitally coordinated leaderless, and actively rejecting traditional political parties. But at the same time, we're seeing events like the UK banning Palestine Action, which critics are definitely arguing criminalizes dissent. And we can't ignore instances of political violence, like the tragic assassination of conservative activist Charlie Kirk. That understandably triggered outrage, mourning, and intensified debate about political violence, campus safety, free expression. All of this, even things like falling consumer sentiment, economic anxiety, it paints a picture of profound societal unrest, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. These are all significant indicators of really deep societal shifts underway. The underlying truth here, as the briefing frames it, is that younger generations embody distinct values and expectations. They simply will not inherit broken systems quietly.
Uh-huh.
Their uprisings often aren't just political in the old sense. They seem driven by a deep inner knowing almost, that inequality, corruption, exploitation, they're just incompatible with a thriving, evolving world. These youth revolts signal the growing refusal to comply with outdated paradigms, an insistence on co-creating something radically different. And regarding civil liberties, what we're seeing is that the line between security and control is being exposed. It's becoming clearer. Well, each ban, each crackdown, it sort of reveals the true nature of state power. It awakens people to the fragility of free speech, the urgent need to reclaim sovereignty of voice, assembly, thought. And on political violence, it tragically forces people to confront that political discourse is no longer safe in the way maybe it once felt. The violence is seen as a symptom of deeper systemic issues, corruption, media manipulation, maybe even spiritual imbalance. It compels people to ask, who actually benefits from chaos? It's about recognizing how these weaponized narratives feed division.
Yeah.
Even that economic anxiety we mentioned, the falling consumer sentiment, the market bets on Fed rate cuts, it highlights how money and markets are revealed as engineered illusions. And that realization pushes people toward local resilience, parallel economies, and maybe focusing on intrinsic value over purely material control. All these seemingly separate events, they're deeply interconnected. They show a profound systemic unraveling happening right now.
Okay, so as we've journeyed through all these alternative news stories, trying to pull back the curtain on the surface narratives, what does it all really mean? What's the bigger overarching pattern you see emerging from all this?
A powerful pattern is definitely emerging. The briefing identifies some really clear themes across everything we've touched on. We're seeing widespread sovereignty battles, right? Whether it's those Pacific Islands asserting autonomy, nations vying for AI control, or that whole move towards alternative finance.
Mm-hmm.
We also observe exposed fragilities in global supply chains, critical infrastructure, the root causes of youth unrest,
mm-hmm.
all revealing the inherent instability of the current systems. And crucially, we're seeing illusions cracking, alliances that aren't as solid as they look. Financial stability that isn't truly stable. It all points to a deeper truth, I think. Every breakdown, crackdown, and disruption is also a revelation. The briefing highlights that systems of control are being unmasked, that fragilities are being exposed, and ultimately, perhaps most importantly, people are being pushed inward to heart consciousness and discernment, pushed to reclaim their personal power, their own perspective.
This deep dive really shows how each story we've looked at acts like a kind of hidden teacher, doesn't it? Pushing humanity to awaken from complacency, to recognize these profound shifts. The surface story is so often the distraction, while the awakening story is that deeper invitation. An invitation to question, to realign, and to rise above the illusions that, well, once kept humanity divided and maybe a bit asleep.
Well said. And as truth continues to emerge, this global awakening really does accelerate, which raises, I think, an important question for you, for everyone listening, to consider this week. In a world where these old systems are visibly cracking and new realities are trying to emerge, what personal step can you take? What one step can you take to reclaim your own sovereignty? Maybe it's in how you engage with digital information. Maybe it's in the economic choices you make. Or maybe it's simply about strengthening your own inner discernment. What's your step?
Something for everyone to think about. Stay informed, keep questioning everything, and definitely keep connecting those dots. This has been your Truth Seeker Weekly Briefing Alternative News Recap. Until next time, keep seeking.